You're not morally obligated to pay any outrageous price somebody wants to charge for something just to prove you're not cheap. Do you understand this? It so happens exactly the opposite is true. The Jews are the biggest spenders in the world. They buy the best homes, the best clothes, the best cars. They buy the best of everything. And that's a fact. They just make sure they get it for less than anybody else.
Hi, everyone. Well, hope you enjoyed our special anniversary show last week with Moish on location. Well, we're back and down to business with year two of your special radio show. Hi, I'm Hirsch Galin. It's Parshas B'Shalach. The Jews, after getting thrown out of Egypt last week, are now headed for the Sea of Reeds, sometimes called the Red Sea. But wait, Pharaoh, big bad Pharaoh, changes his mind. He can't let all that cheap labor escape for good. So he saddles up his chariot, grabs his balagulas, and heads for the sea. He knows he's got them trapped. What do they do? What else? Trust in the one above. Moshe raises his staff, the sea splits, the Jews cross over on dry land. The Egyptians think, of course, they can do it too. The water comes back down. The Egyptians drown. Pharaoh's army is wiped out. The Jews start singing a song of praise to Hashem, God. Then a reality check. The Jews are in the desert. No water, no phone, no food, no pets. They ain't got no cigarettes, but they got the Holy One, blessed be He, who makes the water flow from rocks, food, manna falling from heaven, and quails to appear every day. They gather double portions on Friday in preparation for, you guessed it, the Sabbath, where they were prohibited from gathering anything. But all of us here are gathered today. Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, Mr. Vora Dalin, Chef Chaim Reiser, and of course, Musical Moish. Be right there, getting you in the mood for yet another exciting Shabbat weekend. We'll have your community announcements and mazel tovs, along with current news fresh from Israel National Radio, coming up on the half hour. And the program today is sponsored in part by Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, by Next Generation Financial Services, when you need money, you're 62 and don't want to pay it back, and by Artistic Photography, when you want to get it right the first time. And they also sponsor the Jewish Experience Radio Program's website, JewishExperienceRadio.com. Stop by for a visit and stay for a Jewish experience. Candlelighting time this week is no later than 5:31 p.m. So, Pocono Moish, moving kind of slow at the junction. You should be all rested up and good to go on today's J.E.
My question is, how did you pick me up in the Poconos?
I found you. I have Homeland Security.
Found me and you
Who's the head of Homeland Security?
Tell me.
A guy named Chertoff. He's Jewish, right?
Really?
He's also a firm guy. Yeah, he's into it. So he knew exactly where you were. He's got your phone tapped. You know about that, right?
And I was tracked down.
Tracked down. We got the satellites pointed right at those mountains. No way to escape.
You got me right in there, right in the
pocket. We can't find Al-Qaeda, but we can find Moish.
Hey.
Izmir.
Anyways, Hirsch, at this time, I want to wish you and our entire listening audience a mazel tov.
And Simon Tov. Hey, Lana.
And Simon Tov. As we embark on a brand new year.
That's right. We threw the lines in. The ship is leaving the harbor. Here's the second year underway.
We are good to go.
Well, how are you going to get us through this?
Well, I decided that we're going to start. Every cut and selection that we do on this show is going to be brand new, never played before.
Oh, wow, that's
on the J.E. Isn't that awesome?
That's awesome.
Okay, in that case, let's get started with Amiran Devir and his orchestra, Shomer Nafshi and Adon Olam.
Oh,
Well, we certainly know how to rock you up here on the JE. Well, now it's time to slow things down a little. Here's something brand new from Udi Ullman, and the selection is Kayol Taroig.
You know, Moish, Monday is Tu B'Shvat.
Tu B'Shvat. You mean time to eat those delicious fruity nudies?
It's like the new year, fruits. The new year for trees.
New year for trees. I remember my kids come home from school singing, Tu B'Shvat Hagiya, Chag La'Ilanot.
Very good. Very good. I knew you were getting the music for some reason. Anyway, do you know that a man is compared to a tree?
Really?
Yeah. To tell us about it, here's Rabbi Meir Goldwasser.
This week, we will celebrate Tu B'Shvat, the new year of the trees. The Torah likens the human being to a tree, and the tzaddik to a flourishing date palm. In a remarkable statement in the Talmud, our sages declare that a tzaddik lives on forever. For just as his seed is alive, so is he alive. It is noteworthy that the word seed is used here rather than descendants, children, or disciples. By choosing the word seed in this connection, our sages convey to us the specific images and ideas which this word brings to our minds. One of these ideas is the wonderful process of growth which transforms a tiny seed into a multiple reproduction of the parent, be it an ear of grain or, in the case of a fruit seed, a fruit-bearing tree. The education of a young child is like the planting of a seed, but it is not the easy cultivation of a simple plant. It is rather the nurturing of potential fruit trees, which will ultimately yield generations upon generations of their own kind. Hence, much time and effort is required to ensure that our children receive a pure and proper Torah training. Another thought that the Talmud wished to convey to us by using the word seed is the care which a young plant or seed requires during the growth process, and that the effect of a little extra care at an early stage is multiplied in the final product. If a notch is carved in a mature tree, the cut does not spread and the damage is confined to the particular area where the cut was made. If, however, a scratch should be made in the seed prior to planting it, the entire tree could be deformed as a result of that single scratch. Likewise, if a middle-aged man should, under trying circumstances, compromise in the observance of a mitzvah, God forbid, it is more than likely that the ingrained training and habit of his early years will eventually prevail and he will once again return to a full Torah observance. If, however, our youth is reared in a spirit of compromise, they become deprived of their natural warmth and zealous enthusiasm for a full Torah life. This scratch in their soul can give rise, chas v'shalom, to a spiritually crippled generation.
Will Israel ever see an end to violence? How will the war against Iraq's insurgents impact Israel? Will changes on the Supreme Court have any effect on the Jewish community? Is anti-Semitism in Europe on the rise? What can be done about it? For a look behind the headlines, read the Foreword, the nation's Jewish newspaper. The Foreword reveals the personalities, motivations, and histories that are fueling the news abroad. The Foreword also provides an in-depth look at issues affecting us at home, with comprehensive reports on everything from politics and religion to culture and the arts. It even has its own matchmaking section for Jewish singles. Try 4 weeks free, then be billed $24.95 for another 26 issues. Not satisfied? Just write cancel on the bill and keep the first 4 issues free.
Call now for the Foreword, 800-992-3333. That's 800-992-3333. By the way, if you're over 62 and you own your own home, find out how you can get money from your home without having to ever pay it back as long as you live in that home. Call 412-562-2220. Get tax-free money now by calling 412-562-2220 to participate in a government-sponsored home equity conversion. First Mariner Bank, an equal opportunity lender. And now, back to the music with Moshe Papaw.
La 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 la
And a little something livelier there to get you in the mood for another Shabbos.
Another Shabbos in America. And you know why we celebrate Shabbos in America? Here's Rabbi Eisen, the author of Miraculous Journey, with his Immigration Series, Part 3. Rabbi?
Immigration to America, Part 3. Arrival in America. 7 out of every 10 immigrants came through the port of New York. In 1892, the government opened the Ellis Island Reception Center. In the eyes of the immigrants, Ellis Island was Judgment Day for determining entrance into heaven. Immigrants piled into the massive hall and broke into dozens of lines. One by one, they were subjected to several medical examinations, and those who appeared sickly or dim-witted were detained for further checking. Most detentions were for the eye disease trachoma, which particularly affected Jewish children. After passing the medical examinations, immigrants were questioned about their character, money, relatives, crime, and work. Many gave the wrong answers and got into trouble. For example, if one said he had a job waiting for him in the United States, he was subject to deportation because the law prohibited the importation of contract labor. The Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, HIAS, attempted to help Jewish immigrants through the bewildering experience. While more than 95% of all immigrants were admitted to the United States, often eligible parents had to return to Europe because a child was refused entry. Sometimes people sent back would try to enter the United States again and succeeded. Life in America. In Europe, America was known as the Golden Land, while in reality, America was anything but a golden land. After enduring the Ellis Island ordeal, the immigrant had to manage on his own with little or no protection. Countless thousands were cheated at docks and on trains and boats, suffering painful losses at the hands of dishonest travel agents, lawyers, bankers, notaries, and interpreters. Most immigrants settled in New York City, which became the largest Jewish city in the world, a distinction that it still holds. 1 square mile of the Lower East Side became the center of Jewish life, eventually holding more than 1 million people in its tenements. People were jammed into congested buildings that had a greater population density than even the notorious slums of India and China. One area of the East Side had more than 500 people per acre. The streets were filled with hundreds of stands and push carts selling every kind of cheap merchandise. Jobs. Although there were many possible occupations as well as peddling, most immigrant Jews entered the garment industry. One reporter said the Jewish needle made America the best-dressed nation in the world. It also came close to enslaving the immigrant generation in the sweatshops where that needle was plied. By 1900, more than 150,000 Jewish immigrants and their families were making their living in the clothing industry, which after the invention of the sewing machine required little training and skill.
Now, from the largest independent news organization in the Middle East, here's Ernie Singer with Israel National News.
Defense Minister Shaul Mofaz raising the Iranian nuclear threat, Israel's position regarding the Hamas victory in the recent PLO elections, and defense coordination in a speech before a forum of North Atlantic Treaty Organization defense ministers held in Sicily on Friday. Describing the speech as an historic occasion, defense ministry officials noting the presence of representatives of Arab states such as Israel's neighbors Egypt and Jordan, and African nations Tunisia, Algeria, Morocco, and Mauritania next to the NATO representatives. NATO Secretary General Jaap de Hoop Scheffer has dismissed the call for Israel to be given NATO membership as a security umbrella to protect it from any threats from Iran. Italian Defense Minister Antonio Martino was quoted this past week as calling for Israel to be given NATO membership. Quoting Martino, "The state of Israel is the only state whose existence is called into doubt by others." Martino, who spoke at the same briefing as de Hoop Scheffer, noted that any move toward membership, a process which can take years, could come only after an Israeli request. Israel has in recent years sought to boost its ties with NATO without asking for membership. The Jerusalem Post citing senior officers from Israel's Northern Command warning this past week that if Syrian President Bashar Assad continues to feel threatened by the United States and the rest of the international community, he may be pushed into a corner and decide to fire missiles at Israel. A senior officer telling the Post, "We haven't changed anything, but we are staying alert and using our intelligence services to stay on top of anything that might happen in Syria that could have an impact on Israel." Analysts casting doubt on the possibility that Assad would launch a missile strike against Israel, saying that if he did, it would definitely serve a death blow to his regime. Quoting Dr. Mark Heller, a senior research associate at the Jaffe Center for Strategic Studies, "Getting into a shooting match with Israel would not help his situation." Yiftach Shapir, a former intelligence officer and senior researcher at the center, backs up Heller and claims that while Syria is armed with Scud missiles, they are not meant to be used in an attack on Israel, but to serve as a deterrent to an Israeli attack and to balance the military powers in the region. Quoting Shapir, "No one can accurately predict what Assad has in his head and what he will do. Technically, he has the power to launch missiles if he wants to, but the possibility is slim." Continuing to quote, "He knows Israel's capabilities, and if a Scud falls here, Israel will respond fiercely." Jerusalem police limiting entrance to the Temple Mount for Muslim Friday prayers out of concern over disturbances in the ongoing cartoon controversy involving the Islamic prophet Muhammad. Entrance to the mount limited to men over the age of 45 and women with blue Israeli identification cards. "They did not just take things away, as we previously reported. Reports from PLO-controlled Gaza say the damage to the hothouses left behind by Jewish residents in the disengagement program last summer is irreparable," explaining the people hired to protect them from acts of vandalism decided to commit vandalism. Using bulldozers and other equipment, they destroyed the frames of the hothouses along with irrigation equipment and computers. The hothouses were purchased by USAID and other organizations to enable the Gaza Arabs to benefit from the already existing infrastructure, but this possibility has now been eliminated, a number of PLO policemen wounded by the gunman in the process. 31 political parties have registered to compete for parliamentary positions in Israel's upcoming March 28th election. Since the establishment of the state, this is only the third time that so many parties have registered. Victims of Arab Terror International holding a Tu B'Shvat dinner Sunday night at Jerusalem's Yekar Synagogue to benefit terror victims who have fallen in between the cracks of government assistance. For more information, people in Israel can call Victims of Arab Terror International before or after Shabbat at 02-582-1106. The dinner will include music by Akiva Gersh and friends featuring Matt Tonti, broadcast live between 6 and 8 p.m. Israel time on Sunday as a special edition of The Beat with Master of Ceremonies Binyamin Breski on the internet at IsraelNationalRadio.com. The Kinneret, or Sea of Galilee, rising 7.5 centimeters or 3 inches between Thursday and Friday. Shabbat Yud Gimel, or the 13th day of Shabbat on the Jewish calendar, and the weather forecast, partly cloudy skies and warmer temperatures through Shabbat, increasing cloudiness on Sunday, followed by a drop in temperatures and light rain, mainly over the north on Monday. In Jerusalem and the Golan Heights on Friday, 12 degrees centigrade, 54 Fahrenheit. At the Red Sea, 21 degrees centigrade, 70 Fahrenheit. The Dead Sea, 22 degrees centigrade, 72 Fahrenheit. Ernie Singer, Israel National Radio.
And we'd like to wish our brothers and sisters in the Holy Land a peaceful and restful Shabbat.
And let's look around the community for the Mazel Tovs this week. And a good friend of mine, Mr. and Mrs. Sholem Cohn, on the engagement of their son, Mendy.
Mazel tov.
I think we're all getting older there, Moishele. Dr. and Mrs. Hirsch Wax on the marriage of their granddaughter.
Mazel tov and simitov.
I'm going to throw a little quick mazel tov in here for the staff of the Jewish Experience for their article in the newspaper and the Daily News and in the Tribune Review and in the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette.
A big mazel tov right there.
As we look around the community for the events, on March 3rd, Shabbat, across America, there'll be a dinner at 7 p.m. at different synagogues. You've got to contact your local synagogue for more information. Also, there'll be a youth Shabbat at Beth Shalom Synagogue Saturday morning, so you want to check with them on that. The Judaic Library at Lubavitch Center, open to the public, Sundays 12 to 4:30, Wednesdays 3 to 4 and 7 to 8, and after Shabbos, 1 hour. Stop in and check out a book or two, and you have opportunity to use the extensive research volumes available. The Alvin Weinberg Father and Son Learning Program Grand Finale at the Pittsburgh Kollel this Shabbos. So if you haven't been there before, you should go there this Shabbos. 7:30 p.m., that's 7:30 p.m. after Shabbos. For boys in grades 1 through 8, there'll be pizza and prizes, and they are still doing construction, so please use the rear entrance. The meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous meets at the Olive Institute every Sunday evening from 7 to 8:30. Program's a recovery group for people who cannot control their eating and or their weight. For more information, you can call Ilan at 412-422-2224. Young Israel announces its new girls program for any girl in high school, grades 9 to 12. Their next meeting will be on Sunday, February 19th from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Young Israel, 5831 Bartlett Street, and they'd say come and bring a friend for some fun activities, schmoozing, a little learning too. For more information, you can call Marlene Ross at 412-422-1336. Finally, the Yeshiva Girls High School production of Shalom Song, an inspiring story of determination, and that'll be occurring March 6th and 7th. Doors are open at 7 p.m. For ticket information, call 412-422-7301, extension 1311. That's 412-422-7301, extension 1311. And if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, don't forget you can give us a call at 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net by noon on Monday for that week's program. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week is no later than 5:31 p.m. And welcome to another edition of Candid Comments. I'm Hirsch Flynn. We're going to take a look today at incidents of police violence in the land of Israel and abuse. And it's hard to understand this coming from what's going on in Israel today. But what I'm going to do is just tell you a little bit of the stories of the recent uprising in Hebron and some of the violence that's been perpetrated from their own people, on their own people, and it's pretty scary. But I'm just going to give over some stories of what's happening there, and if you're spurred to act, you can call Minister Tzipi Livni and, you know, fax over there and stress your opposition to what's happening, because it's pretty crazy stuff. One youth that participated in the Amona protests and it prefers to remain anonymous explained his view of the events. Quote, "We had no intentions of throwing rocks. When we saw the way the police charged in with their horses and clubs at the people standing around, we just felt there was no choice. We had to do something. So we took the rocks that we had brought up to hold down the barbed wire and threw some of them." 15-year-old Avishag of Haifa says that she's still in pain and now has developed fever, and she told the following story. Quote, "I was in house number 6, and the Yasamnikim came through the window. One of them pulled me up by the ear while beating me with his club in my stomach. He didn't just hit me, he turned the stick around almost inside me. And then another kicked me in the back and then sort of threw me out the window, giving me glass splinters in my leg. That's what they did with all the girls there." Quote, "After a few seconds, my stomach began to hurt me terribly and I just started screaming in pain, all doubled over. An army medic told me I had better go to the clinic. But a Yasamnik did not let me pass. Only when they brought me a stretcher, because I couldn't walk, did he let me go through. In the clinic, they didn't know exactly what to do, but they saw there was real fear of damage to an internal organ, so they called an ambulance. But throughout this time, they couldn't give me my painkiller, so I was yelling in pain the whole time. Once in the hospital, at Shari Tzedek, they gave me an ultrasound, infusions and everything. That's when they finally told me that I was just a millimeter away of having an internal organ damaged, which would have meant a dangerous operation. I was also very worried that my uterus was affected, but in the end, they reassured me as well. I hope the next time the whole nation will be there, not to attack, but to defend. It has now been learned that even Magen David Adom medical teams were not immune to police attacks. Sholem Galil of Beit El, an experienced medic, told this story. Quote, "I was outside house number 6, and a border guard officer called out, 'Medic, medic.' So I came, and he said that someone was hurt inside the house. I climbed through the window, the doors were sealed, and looked for the patient. Two border guard policemen were there and said, 'No one is in here, get out.' And they started beating me. At the same time, they pushed me toward the salon where two other policemen were blocking the way. I screamed that I was an MDA medic, and of course they saw my orange MDA vest, but they didn't care, and they kept on beating me until I was finally able to get out. At one point, we came to a house. The commander asked me to go in and deal with those who were hurt. When I went in with my bright orange vest, there were policemen who recognized me from previous houses, but one of them pushed me into a corner and started screaming at me and didn't allow me to go up to the roof and check who was hurt. At the same time, Yasamnik started hitting me without stopping. I tried to say that the officer had told me to come in, and they said they didn't care, and they kept on beating me. Afterwards, at another house, they told me to go in and check the wounded, but we chose not to." And these stories continue to come out very, very disturbing from the land of Israel. These are policemen from the land of Israel that are taking out this kind of anger against their own citizens. Can you imagine if this happened in the United States? There would be investigation immediately, and there always is. And these kind of things that go on, I mean, people hold other people responsible for these kind of actions. This is incredible. It's unfortunate. And they should be held responsible. So I just, you know, here's one more I'm going to tell you. During a protest at the Shiloh Junction north of Amona, a dozen police jumped a mother of 9. Now, can you imagine this? Delivered strong blows to all parts of her body and then stripped off her shirt in public. The woman who recently gave birth told her story to our correspondent on a condition of anonymity. She explained that she's ashamed to gain publicity for being stripped in public by the police. I mean, this kind of stuff, this is in Eretz HaKodesh. This is the Holy Land. And there's more information about this story also that I can't go into at this time. But this is very, very disturbing. And I think everybody within the sound of this radio station that hears this program should either fax, call, email the authorities in the land of Israel, stage their, you know, state their protest. It's just something that has to be stopped. It's something that we have to understand. We have a job here to create a light unto the nations in the land of Israel. This is not just another piece of ground. And hopefully, by doing this, we'll hasten the coming of Mashiach, where everybody will know what they're supposed to do, and everybody will you know, be nice to each other and stop this kind of crazy behavior. This is Hirsch DeLynn. And if you have any comments on what I've just said, please email at jewishexperience@verizon.net, or you can call us at 412-979-5770. See you next week.
People and nations are striving to create a world of goodness and kindness. A blueprint exists for a better world. Thousands of years ago, the human race was given a plan for a quality life. There are 7 universal laws to follow, known as the laws of Noah. These universal truths include: believe in God, honor God, do not murder, do not commit adultery or incest, do not steal, avoid cruelty to animals, establish courts of justice.
Well, you've always heard that the women are the backbone of society. Here's Deborah DeLynn to prove it.
The word Torah comes from the Hebrew word hora'ah, which means lesson. The Torah is full of lessons we can learn, lessons not just about mitzvot, history, and Hashem. It also teaches us about human instinct and special character traits that Hashem gave to human beings, and the Jewish people in particular. This week's parsha, Parshas Beshalach, is full of so many dramatic events and miracles that Hashem performed for us when we went out of Egypt, or Mitzrayim. One of the most famous miracles performed was the miracle of the splitting of the Red Sea. The Jews were coming out of Egypt when suddenly they see Paro and his army coming after them to try to impress them back into slavery. The Jews are at loss what to do. Should they give up and drown themselves? Should they make war? Should they go back to Egypt? Or maybe they should pray? The Jewish camp was divided into these 4 groups, trying to decide what to do. Then, a brave man by the name of Nachshon ben Aminadav goes into the water, and behold, the waters part and the Jews escape to the other side, while the Egyptians drown in the water. After having witnessed this great, outstanding incident, the Jewish people are overcome and burst into song, praising Hashem for the miracles he did for them. However, we learn that it was only after the women, led by Miriam the prophetess, that the men and Moshe Rabbeinu sang as well. Miriam was the sister of Moshe and Aharon. She was the leader of the women, and the women loved her and respected her unconditionally. In fact, our sages tell us that the woman had a much deeper relationship with her and the men did with Moshe. Well, what was the difference? The men only believed in Moshe Rabbeinu as a result of the Egyptians' punishment, and to some extent, they affirmed their belief in Hashem through Moshe. They believed that Hashem only performed the wonders on their behalf because of Moshe. This proved to be a mistake, as we see later on in the sin of the golden calf. As soon as Moshe's back was turned, the men wavered in their belief in Hashem and served the idol. In contrast, the woman trusted Miriam as a prophetess without looking at her resume. That's why later on in the desert, they didn't turn to another deity. Instead, they turned to Miriam's son Hur to help them out. The woman's version of the Shira, the song, was very short and only praised Hashem for certain things. It didn't mention going into Eretz Yisrael or accepting the Torah. Why? For righteous people, miracles are commonplace. The righteous are very firm in the belief that the world was created for the Jewish people, so miracles for them are something natural. The Jewish women coming out of Mitzrayim were on such a high level that for them the miracles were something natural. As a result, they only praised Hashem for vanquishing their foe. The men, on the other hand, were not on such a high level, and the occurrence of such miracles were extraordinary. Women throughout the ages have done such amazing and courageous things, being in the front line and leading the nation on the path of true service of Hashem. We can truly understand and appreciate why our sages say that it was because of the Jewish woman that people were redeemed from slavery. Let's internalize this lesson and take the lead to bring our nation out of the slavery of exile to the era of Mashiach, when the world will ring with the melody of our praises to Hashem. Have a good Shabbos.
בוטחים בשם, כהציון, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לאוי לא מיישב. בוטחים בשם, כהציון, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לאוי לא מיישב. ירושלים, מורי מורי, סובים לו כהציון, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לאוי לא מיישב. הבוטחים בשם, כהציון, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לא ימות לאוי לא מיישב, לאוי לא מיישב. ירושלים, מורים מורים סובים לו, והשם סובים סובים לעמו.
Well, Hirsch, are you in the mood for something munchy, crunchy, and deliciously
I'm
crunchy,
in the mood
crunchy,
for something
crunchy.
And the only place to get something like that is to turn to the prince of gastronomic delights. Here he is, Chef Chaim Reisner, and you can find out more about his recipes at chaimskosherkitchen.com. Chaim?
Thanks, Hirsch. And Moish, this week we're going to do one of my family's all-time favorites, barbecued spare ribs cholent. So here we go. You'll need one large rack of beef spare ribs. Cut them apart. 1 tablespoon of salt and pepper, 1 medium onion chopped, 2 stalks of celery chopped, 1 12-ounce bottle of beer, and, using the same bottle, 12 ounces of water, 4 cloves of minced garlic, 3 tablespoons of brown sugar, 2 tablespoons of Worcestershire sauce, no fish added, 1 tablespoon of dried mustard, 1 teaspoon of liquid smoke, 3 tablespoons of honey, 5 peeled small potatoes optional, 2 tablespoons of white vinegar, and 1 small hot pepper minced fine, and 1 cup of ketchup, and to that you're going to add 2 to 3 cups, I'll make it 4 cups of water. And to begin, you're going to use a Dutch oven. Put a little oil in the bottom of the oven. Take your ribs and place them in on high heat. Brown them on all sides. Remove them. Then add basically all of the other ingredients. First, the vegetables. Sauté them for a minute or two. Then add all of the salt and pepper and the garlic. Then you want to add your liquid, the water, the ketchup, the Worcestershire sauce, the mustard, the honey, and the vinegar. And put the ribs back inside the pot. Bring it up to a boil. Reduce it to a simmer. And let it cook for about 2 hours, and there you have it. A wonderful, wonderful rib cholent. See you next week. And guess what, Hirsch? You made it. Have a great Shabbos.
Life is moving faster and faster. Things are changing all the time, and it's a comfort to know in your time of need that at Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, the Jewish tradition continues. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home has served the Pittsburgh Jewish community since 1947 and has recently remodeled its entire facility to better serve you. Burton Hirsch Funeral Directors are members of the Jewish Funeral Directors Association and work closely with area rabbis to ensure that your needs as a Jewish family are totally met. Their attentive and compassionate guidance results in treating each family as their own. I personally met with Michael Hilgefort, and did you know that Burton Hirsch Funeral Home is even involved with community educational programs to ensure that Jewish families know what to do to have a proper burial? In your time of special need, call Squirrel Hill's only Jewish funeral home, Burton Hirsch at 412-521-2600. That's 412-521-2600. They welcome your request to visit and tour their state-of-the-art facilities. Burton Hirsch Funeral Home, proud sponsors of the Jewish Experience, 412-521-2600. By the way, if you're over 62 and you own your own home, find out how you can get money from your home without having to ever pay it back as long as you live in that home. Call 412-562-2220. Get tax-free money now by calling 412-562-2220 to participate in a government-sponsored home equity conversion. First Mariner Bank, an equal opportunity lender. And now here's Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, who's back with a story of Mesiris Nefesh, a story of self-sacrifice. Rabbi?
This week commemorates the yahrzeit of the Friedeke Lubavitcher Rebbe. The Rebbe lived in communist Russia and defied the order of the government by continuing to teach Torah to the Jewish children and adults alike. One evening, when the officers of the KGB entered into the Rebbe's dining room to arrest him, one of the officers took out his pistol in order to make the Rebbe afraid. The Rebbe said to him, "Your little toy instills fear into people who have many gods and one world, but I have one God and two worlds, and therefore I am not afraid of it at all. I have not feared you, I do not fear you, and I will not fear you." Later, when the Rebbe was brought to the prison, and before the Rebbe was taken to his cell, he pleaded with the officers to be allowed to put on his tefillin. This request was refused again and again. Finally, when the Rebbe was alone in the room with one of the officers, and the officer's back was toward the Rebbe seized this occasion to take his tefillin and put them on. As he was davening, the officer happened to turn toward the Rebbe and noticed what was going on. In a great rage, the officer got up and began grabbing at the Rebbe's tefillin. The Rebbe, at that point, had to take the tefillin off because he was afraid that they would be torn. The Rebbe asks the following question. The Friedeke Rebbe was allowed, according to the government, to teach Torah to the adults. Why wasn't he satisfied with doing that? By defying the orders of the government and teaching Torah to the children, all could be lost. The Rebbe could be arrested or even killed, and then nothing would be accomplished. Why didn't the Rebbe simply go on to teach the Torah to the adults? At least he would be able to accomplish this. The Rebbe explained that the Friedeke Rebbe understood that the children must be educated, and he gave himself over to this task with a complete self-sacrifice, a Mesiris Nefesh that does not allow for any questions. And we see it was specifically because of the Friedeke Rebbe's complete Mesiris Nefesh that in the end the officers released him and he was free to go on to spread Yiddishkeit. The lesson for us on the yahrzeit of the Friedeke Rebbe is quite clear. When we give ourselves over with Mesiris Nefesh and dedicate ourselves to Torah u'mitzvahs, then there is nothing that will stand in our way. This is Rabbi Meir Goldwasser wishing you all a good Shabbos.
we wrap up our first show of the new year, a couple of reminders. On March 3rd, Shabbat Across America dinner, 7 p.m., contact your local synagogue. The Youth Shabbat, Beth Shalom Synagogue, tomorrow morning. Jake Library at Lubavitch Center, open to the public. You can give them a call at 412-422-7300. The Alvin Weinberg Father and Son Learning Program Grand Finale wraps it up after Shabbos tomorrow for boys in grades 1 to 8, and pizza and prizes, give them a call. The Meeting of Food Addicts and Recovery Anonymous, Sunday evening, 7 to 8:30 p.m. And you can call Alon at 412-422-2224. Young Israel New Girls Program, you can contact them at Young Israel, 5831 Bartlett Street, Sunday, February 19th. And the finally, the Yeshiva Girls High School production of Shalom Song. For ticket information, call 412-422-7301, extension 1311. And don't forget, give us a call if you'd like to have your Mazel Tovs on our program, 412-979-5770, or you can email jewishexperience@verizon.net. And as the Shabbos approaches, it's getting a little bit later, so we got some more time to get home, I want to be sure to thank our faithful and cutting-edge staff who continues in the second year. Rabbi Meir Goldwasser, Rabbi Yosef Eisen, MusicalMoish.com, Dr. Michael Schulman, Chef Chaim Reisner, and Miss Devorah DeLynn, and, of course, our engineer, Jeremy Bossy, for another outstanding show. Don't forget, candlelighting time this week is no later than 5:31 p.m. Until next week, I'm Hirsch DeLynn. Have a wonderful and restful Shabbat.
Shalom, Malachi Elyon.